5. Colonel Fedmon Kassad follows Braun Lamia and Father Hoyt through the dust storm toward the jade tomb. He had lied to Lamia. His night visor and sensors worked well despite the electrical discharge flickering around them. Following the two seemed the best chance for finding the shrike. Kassad remembered the rock lion hunts on Hebron. One tethered a goat and waited. Data from the telltales he had set around the encampment flickers on Kassad's tactical display and whispers through his implant. It is a calculated risk to leave Weintraub and his daughter, Martin Silenus and the consul sleeping there, unprotected except for the automatics and an alarm. But then, Kassad seriously doubts whether he can stop the shrike anyway. They are all goats, tethered, waiting. It is the woman, the phantom named Moneta, whom Kassad is determined to find before he dies. The wind has continued to rise, and now it screams around Kassad, reducing normal visibility to zero and pelting his impact armor. The dunes glow with discharge, and miniature lightning crackles around his boots and legs as he strides to keep Lamia's heat signature in clear view. Information flows in from her open comm log. Hoyt's closed channels reveal only that he is alive and moving. Kassad passes under the outstretched wing of the Sphinx, feeling the weight invisible above him, hanging there like a great boot heel. Then he turns down the valley, seeing the jade tomb as an absence of heat and infrared, a cold outline. Hoyt is just entering the hemispherical opening. Lamia is 20 meters behind him. Nothing else moves in the valley. The telltales from the camp, hidden by night and storm behind Kassad, reveal Saul and the baby sleeping, the consul lying awake but unmoving. Nothing else within the perimeter. Kassad slips the safety off on his weapon and moves forward quickly, his long legs taking great strides. He would give anything at that second to have access to a spotter sat, his tactical channels complete, rather than have to deal with this partial picture of a fragmented situation. He shrugs within his impact armor and keeps moving. Braun Lamia almost does not make the final 15 meters of her voyage to the jade tomb. The wind has risen to gale force and beyond, shoving her along so that twice she loses her footing and falls headlong into the sand. The lightning is real now, splitting the sky in great bursts that illuminate the glowing tomb ahead. Twice she tries calling Hoyt, Kassad, or the others, sure that no one could be sleeping through this back at the camp. But her comm log and implants give her only static, their wide bands registering gibberish. After the second fall, Lamia gets to her knees and looks ahead. There has been no sign of Hoyt since that brief glimpse of someone moving toward the entrance. Lamia grips her father's automatic pistol and gets to her feet, allowing the wind to blow her the last few meters. She pauses before the entrance hemisphere. Whether due to the storm and electrical display or something else, the jade tomb is glowing a bright, bilious green, which tinges the dunes and makes the skin of her wrists and hands look like something from the grave. Lamia makes a final attempt to raise someone on her comm log and then enters the tomb. Father Lenar Hoyt, of the 1,200-year-old Society of Jesus, resident of the New Vatican on Pachem, and loyal servant of His Holiness Pope Urban XVI, is screaming obscenities. Hoyt is lost and in great pain. The wide rooms near the entrance to the jade tomb have narrowed. The corridor has wound back on itself so many times that now Father Hoyt is lost in a series of catacombs, wandering between greenly glowing walls, in a maze he does not remember from the day's explorations or from the maps he has left behind. The pain, pain which has been with him for years, pain which has been his companion since the tribe of the Bikura had implanted the two cruciforms, his own and Paul Duret's, now threatens to drive him mad with its new intensity. The corridor narrows again. Lenar Hoyt screams, no longer aware that he is doing so, no longer aware of the words he cries out, words which he has not used since childhood. He wants release, release from the pain, release from the burden of carrying Father Duret's DNA, personality, Duret's soul, in the cross-shaped parasite on his back, and from carrying the terrible curse of his own foul resurrection in the cruciform on his chest. But even as Hoyt screams, he knows that it was not the now-dead Bikura who had condemned him to such pain. The lost tribe of colonists, resurrected by their own cruciforms so many times that they had become idiots, mere vehicles for their own DNA and that of their parasites, had been priests also, priests of the Shrike. Father Hoyt, of the Society of Jesus, has brought a vial of holy water blessed by his holiness, a Eucharist consecrated in a solemn high mass, and a copy of the Church's ancient rite of exorcism. These things are forgotten now, sealed in a perspex bubble in a pocket of his cloak. Hoyt stumbles against a wall and screams again. The pain is a force beyond description now. The full ampule of ultramorph he had shot only 15 minutes earlier, helpless against it. Father Hoyt screams and claws at his clothes, ripping off the heavy cloak, the black tunic and Roman collar, pants and shirt and underclothes until he is naked, shivering with pain and cold in the glowing corridors of the jade tomb and screaming obscenities into the night. He stumbles forward again, finds an opening, and moves into a room larger than any he remembers from the day's searches there. Bare, translucent walls rise 30 meters on each side of an empty space. Hoyt stumbles to his hands and knees, looks down, and realizes that the floor has become almost transparent. He is staring into a vertical shaft beneath the thin membrane of floor, a shaft that drops a kilometer or more to flames. The room fills with the red-orange pulse of light from the fire so far below. Hoyt rolls to his side and laughs. If this is some image of hell summoned up for his benefit, it is a failure. Hoyt's view of hell is tactile. It is the pain which moves in him like jagged wires pulled through his veins and guts. Hell is almost the memory of starving children in the slums of Armagast and the smile of politicians sending boys off to die in colonial wars. Hell is the thought of the Church dying out in his lifetime, in Duret's lifetime. The last of its believers, a handful of old men and women, filling only a few pews of the huge cathedrals on Pachem. Hell is the hypocrisy of saying morning mass, with the evil of the cruciform pulsating warmly, obscenely, above one's heart. There is a rush of hot air, and Hoyt watches as a section of floor slides back, creating a trap door to the shaft below. The room fills with the stench of sulfur. Hoyt laughs at the cliché, but within seconds the laughter turns to sobs. He is on his knees now, scraping with bloodied nails at the cruciforms on his chest and back. The cross-shaped welts seem to glow in the red light. Hoyt can hear the flames below. Hoyt! Still sobbing, he turns to see the woman, Lamia, framed in the doorway. She is looking past him, beyond him, and raising an antique pistol. Her eyes are very wide. Father Hoyt feels the heat behind him, hears the roar as of a distant furnace, but above that, he suddenly hears the slide and scrape of metal on stone. Footsteps. Still clawing at the bloodied welt on his chest, Hoyt turns, his knees rubbed raw against the floor. He sees the shadow first. 10 meters of sharp angles, thorns, blades. Legs like steel pipes, with a rosette of scimitar blades at the knees and ankles. Then, through the pulse of hot light and black shadow, Hoyt sees the eyes. 100 facets, 1,000, glowing red. A laser shone through twin rubies, above the collar of steel thorns, and the quicksilver chest reflecting flame and shadow. Braun Lamia is firing her father's pistol. The slap of the shots echo high and flat above the furnace rumble. Father Lenar Hoyt swivels toward her, raises one hand.
No, don't! He screams. It grants one wish. I have to make a...
The Shrike, which was there, 5 meters away, is suddenly here, an arm's length from Hoyt. Lamia quits firing. Hoyt looks up, sees his own reflection in the fire-burnished chrome of the thing's carapace, sees something else in the shrike's eyes at that instant. And then it is gone. The shrike is gone. And Hoyt lifts his hand slowly, touches his throat, almost bemusedly, stares for a second at the cascade of red which is covering his hand, his chest, the cruciform, his belly. He turns toward the doorway and sees Lamia still staring in terror and shock, not at the shrike now, but at him, at Father Lenar Hoyt of the Society of Jesus. And in that instant, he realizes that the pain is gone, and he opens his mouth to speak. But more, only more red comes out, a geyser of red. Hoyt glances down again, notices for the first time that he is naked, sees the blood dripping from his chin and chest, dripping and pouring to the now dark floor, sees the blood pouring as if someone had upended a bucket of red paint, and then he sees nothing, as he falls face first to the floor, so far, so very far, below.